Hello, my name is Anthony, I'm an addict. Can everybody hear me? So used to being on Zoom, can everybody hear me? It's really, really good to be here. I'm actually very, very nervous. And I talk with a very thick Dublin accent, so I will try and speak a little bit slower, and maybe you'll understand some of what I say, you know. So I'd like to thank Martin and George and everybody for putting this event on. It's amazing. I'd like to thank them for asking me to come over and speak. It's a pleasure to be here. And I always say, it's always a pleasure to speak anywhere. It talks about it in the big book when Bill Wilson requested the pleasure to go back into the institutions and talk to the people who are still in there. And it's always a pleasure to talk to other addicts and come. And to be asked to go anywhere is a pleasure, because I was the type of person who was always asked to leave. I was never asked to come, but I was always asked to leave, you know. So I want to thank everybody for being here and everybody for listening to me. So like I said, my name is Anthony, I'm an addict. By the grace of God, I may never forget that, because that's the most important thing I'll ever learn around here or ever need to know around here, you know. And like George says before I come over, I'm from Dublin, and I'm just going to give my own story. I'm actually very nervous. All of a sudden, the fear is that they're coming on to me, and it's like, say this, say that. I feel fantastic now, but yeah, I am actually nervous, you know, but the truth is, all I have is my experience. All I have is what happened to me around here. I'll be celebrating 11 years next month, or the month after, please God, one day at a time, you know. And when I come in here, I come in a nervous, trembling, desperate wreck of a person. I was totally spiritually, financially, and mentally bankrupt. Every single bit of me internal scaffolding had collapsed, and I had nowhere else to go. And that's why I come in here. And that's the truth of it. I come from a place in Finglas in Dublin. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I don't blame that on why I'm alcoholic or why I'm addict or anything like that. It's just my experience. That's all it is, you know. And when I was young, I've done enough inventory, and I've looked back over the years to really go into when I was young and the way I was, and to really kind of find that hole in the soul that I always suffered with. Because I always suffered with something that told me, this last speaker talked about as well, that I wasn't enough. There was always something wrong. The big book talked about it. I walked around with that impending doom hanging over my head all the time. And I always felt like, I don't know if you know the toys, them little toys that the kids that have, and you have the circle, and the circle goes into the circle, and the square goes into the square, and the triangle goes into the triangle. I was like the circle trying to fit into the square. I just didn't fit. And I always felt like no matter where I went, I just did not fit, you know. And I always had this real low self-esteem, and all this fear and impending doom always going on within me. And from a very, very, very young age, I seeked ease and comfort from stuff from the outside of me. I always seeked ease and comfort from something outside of me. And even very, very young, I remember I had this thing going on when I was young. If I got a scab or I got a hit like a spot or something, I would have to pick at it. And I would pick at it, and I would pick at it, and I would pick at it. And I remember I was in school, and I had a big scab. I was at the getting on my chin, I was at the falling or something, and I was picking at it, and I was bleeding, and there was blood on my face. And I'll never forget the teacher saying to me, "Anthony, stop doing that. Will you just stop doing that?" And I'll never forget it. And I can remember it today, as clear as today, as what's happening here today. I remember saying to her, "I can't stop." And that was to become the mantra of my life. I can't stop, you know, that way. And even then, it was there, that thing of I was not able to kind of stop. And I was, what I've learned now, it was a form of self-mutilation that I was doing to myself then. And that continued. That mantra and that self-mutilation continued for years and years and years and years. And I went through different substances, different things, different shiny things from the outside. Went from that, I went into food, when I would become really uneasy in myself, when I became disconnected in myself, I would look to connect, and I would use food, I would use money, I would use women, I would use sex, I would use porn, I would use drink and drugs. And the same thing that happened to me, what happened with the last speaker, when I used first, all of a sudden I became the circle that just fitted into the circle. It was just right. It was the missing piece of the jigsaw that just slotted right in. And all of a sudden, I got that thing that makes me bodily and mentally different from my fellows. When I used, I got that. I was all right. I was all right in my skin. It was all right to be me. Something left me. And that's what makes me. Normal people don't get that. Normal people have a little drink and they have a laugh. And the book describes it as it's a social lubricant for other people. I am not drinking for a social lubricant. I am drinking for ease and comfort. And once that ease and comfort came within me, I never wanted to feel any other way at all. That magic thing went off in me instantly, you know. And that was at a very, very young age, you know. And 1 minute I felt one way, I used, I felt a different way. I never wanted to go back to feeling that way that I did in the first place. And I chased that to the gates of insanity and death. I really did. By the time I was 16, 17, I had so many charges. I was in so much trouble with the police. I was sent to my first young offenders home. I was given 4 years in the young offenders home, and I went in, and then I came out of that place. Once I came out of that place, the same thing happened to me. I would leave these places. I would actually be all right when I was in them. I remember only talking to somebody recently, and they were saying, we were talking about being in the young offenders home, and I remember saying, I actually felt safe in there. I was safe. I knew the rules. You don't mess with him. If you get drugs, you share them. Other people share them with you. If they don't share their drugs with you, you kick their ass. There's a certain level of rules that we lived by, and I understood it, and I was safe. If I done what I had to do, I was all right. But when I came back out into the real world, all that stuff piled back on. The low self-esteem, the untreated alcoholism, the walking into a shop and a girl smiling at me and not even being able to stay there for me change, getting real wobbly and running out the door, not being able to deal with life. And I always knew what would fix that. That little thing in the back of my head was always there. What would fix that? And I would inevitably... I'm going to get a sip of water. My mouth's drying up here. I would inevitably go back to what I knew. I always went back to what I knew. I always went back to that thing that would give me ease and comfort and that would release that untreated alcoholism, you know. And, yeah, basically that was my life from the age of 13 to 30-odd when I committed to recovery. I went around, I went into another institution, I went around, and all the chaos that came with that. Till I committed to recovery, like I said, about 12 years ago, I committed to recovery, and I committed to recovery through a load of real tragic circumstances in my life. You know, I actually live in a place called Ballymun. And they were all high-rise flats. And a cousin of mine, which was my best friend, he went up to the top of one of the flats. He jumped off the flats. The flats that he done it was just here. Across the road in another block of flats was my sister-in-law. She hung herself. And then my father was murdered in another flat just across the way, you know. And I never forget going into the flat. About a week after it happened, we were asked to go in and clear the flat out. The place, basically, the police told us, go in, take whatever you want, and we'll bin the rest of it, you know. And I went in with my sister, and I'll never ever forget that day, you know. I went in, and me and her went in, and she broke down. She really, really broke down. Her and my father didn't get along. And she was in bits. And I never forget looking around. And he hadn't even got a washing machine in the flat. It was a squat. It was in the my father was a he was a street drinker. He was a chronic alcoholic, and there wasn't even a washing machine. He had his bathtub over here, and he had his jeans and his stockings and all in the bathtub. There was no carpets on the floor. There was no TV. There was nothing. And I'd been in this flat many a times, drinking and fighting with him and all sorts of stuff. And I never noticed it like that. You know, I just thought it was just some place to go, and I'd nowhere else to go. You know, and I never noticed it. And yeah, and I remember looking around, and I remember just thinking, this is the way I'm going to die. This is me. This is, I see my future. You know, people talk about a moment of clarity or an epiphany or God come in. God come in and made me see and made me hear what I needed to hear and what I needed to see. And I truly, truly believe in that. You will hear what you're meant to hear and you will see what you're meant to see when you're meant to hear it and when you're meant to see it and not a second before that. That's just my belief. And anyway, but I looked around and I'll never forget, he used to have a little chair in the corner and he'd sit in that chair and he'd give out full of resentment, you know what I mean? It's all your mother's fault, she threw me out, the bitch, the this, the that, you know? And I would just, yeah, whatever. And I always remember that. And when I was in there, I remember seeing myself when I would be sitting in cells and I'd have my stockings over in the corner and a little base in the water giving out about everybody that was outside saying, it's all their fault that I'm in here and ringing people thinking, where's my tracksuits and where's this and where's that? And I actually seen, like, I see my future. I seen, like, this is it. This is the way you're going to die. And for that second, the armor that I had piled on my heart, all the hard man image, all this stuff that I had going on opened up. And God was able to enter for that split second, you know. And from there, another quote that they say, when the student is ready to hear, the teachers will appear. And I believe in that as well. And I'll never forget, about 2 days after I had that experience, and it was a profound spiritual experience, I've no problem saying that, because I wouldn't be standing here today if it didn't happen. I was walking down the street and I bumped into a friend of mine that I used to use with, and he was clean. He was clean and he was sober and he was talking about being clean and being sober. And I was like, yeah, I'm clean as well. I genuinely did not know what he was talking about. Like, he was starting talking about being clean and I was thinking, did he have a shower this morning? Like, what is he? Did he wash your hair or something? Like, he was using some different products. So I was like, yeah, I'm clean as well. And he was like, no, I don't take drugs anymore. And I was like, neither do I. I'm just on 130 mils of methadone. I get a few tablets, I have a few joints and go out and do a bit of coke on the weekend. We're not jumping counters, so I'm not really taking drugs anymore, you know? And that's what I genuinely thought it was. Like, and he was like, no, I'm abstinence. I don't take any drugs. I don't do any of that stuff. I don't take anything. I don't rob anybody. I don't do anything. And I was like, wow, I really, really didn't. It was a very, very strange concept to me there and then. And he says to me, okay, I'm going to go to this meeting on Friday night. Do you want to come over? And I was like, what meeting? And he's just saying, there's these meetings called Cocaine Anonymous. You can go to them. They help you get off drugs and all. And I was like, okay. And I went to that meeting on a Friday night and I walked in there. And from that day to this day, I have never used drugs. That was 11 years clean in November. It took me about a year to come off all the medications that I was on. I was on antipsychotics and Dalmains and Dismains. I'd go in the doctor one day and tell him I was suicidal. Then I'd go in the next day and tell him I was homicidal. And I would just tell him anything that he needed to hear in order to give me more stuff. So it took about a year for all that stuff to kind of dwindle out, like, you know. But I did. And another thing, even, I don't know, different groups do different things. In different ways. Like, when I went into that group and I was going there for a week or two, even as medicated as I was handed a service position. You stand at this door, you make this tea, you smile at everybody and make sure they're all right. And I got a service position in that meeting that day, and I hold a service position in that meeting still to this day. You know that way? And I just say that for... I say that for the fact that if anybody's new and you're planning on staying around here, service is going to be a very, very important part of you staying around here. You need to get busy. That's what I was told, and it was as simple as that. So, yeah, I went in, and I ended up getting clean. I came off all the medications and I went through the steps, and I'm not going to give a big synopsis of the steps. Anybody here who's been through them has their own experience. Anybody who's here who hasn't been through them, you need to go through them and have your own experience, and then you'll know what we're talking about. You know, my experience is not going to do anything for you. You need to get your own experience, and then you'll be able to do stuff for other people. That's the way it works. Like, I keep handing it on, you know. So anyway, so I came in there and I had that experience, and I went through the book. I had my own experience, and off I went down the 12-step book, and I'm going around, and my partner's in recovery as well. I met a partner in recovery. We've two small kids. I'm actually getting married next month, 4 months, 4 weeks away. We're getting married. We've two small kids. And we live a life of recovery. We live in a home that's based on prayer, meditation, love, tolerance, unity. We believe in the principles that were taught around here, that not one person is more important than the whole, that in order for us all to survive as a unit, we got to put other people first in that unit, you know? So that's just some relationship advice, I suppose. We are going on, and God is really good around here. God is really, really powerful, and God works in very, very mysterious ways, you know. We are going on, and, you know, my girlfriend rings me one day. She's big into 12-stepping people, and we have people in and out of the house all the time. We're always walking with others. We believe in that. And she rings me one day, and she says, look, I have something to tell you. You're sitting down. It's probably going to be a little bit, tough, you know. I'm like, yeah, what is it? What is it? And, she says, you know, this girl, a girl who's still our friend today, a very, very close friend of ours, my girlfriend was walking with her, and she was like, her sister was the one who murdered your father, you know, and I'm like, wow, right, and she says, look, what will I do? She's saying she's in bits, she thinks I'm not going to walk with her, she's all over the gaff, what will I do? I'm like, continue to walk with her, continue, we chop logs and we carry water around here, that's what we do, continue to walk with her, just get on with it, like, you know. And the three of us became very, very close. She's still a very, very good friend of ours, and she's around. And about, it was probably a year later, could be wrong, could be more, could be less, but her and my partner were talking back and forward, and the sister that we were talking about was at the been living on the streets for years, and she was dying. Her body was giving in through to alcohol and drugs, and everything was shutting down, and her parents had brought her home in order for her to die, and she couldn't die, and she kept saying, they would hold on, the priest and all was in, and they would say, just go to God, and she was saying, I can't go to God, I can't, over what she had done, you know, that way, the guilt and the shame, I suppose, on the last days was really, really hard, you know. So I heard this, and I prayed, and I meditated, and it came really strong in my heart. I need to go and see her. I need to go. You know that way? I need to go and see that person. So I asked, and we organized, and I went over, and I seen her. And she was in the bed, and she was really, really bad. She was on death's door. And I held her hand, and I prayed with her, and I told her I forgave her. And I told her it's all right for her to go to God, to go to her maker, with no guilt, with no shame. To go and be the person she needs to be, to go to her creator, you know. And I'll never forget that. She died that day. She died, and I like to think in my spirit that she went with some sort of peace. But even if she didn't, I was able to go down, I was able to talk to the family, and I was able to tell the family about the experience that I had with my father, in my father's flat, that brought me to the place that I am now, that God works in mysterious ways, that my father could never be a father to me in the way I think a father could be, as in, he wasn't loving, he was violent, he was an alcoholic, but he made the ultimate sacrifice in the end in order to break the chains for my kids, because he had been like that, his father had been like that, and we have generations of trauma being handed down and handed down and handed down, and he made that sacrifice in order for me to go in a different direction, how my kids never have to experience what I experienced, because the realm of the spirit has broadened around me, and it's open to everybody, and if you're really, really into it, and you're open to doing stuff around here, just not using, it doesn't cut it. There's a lot more on offer around here. You can really, really get that. So I don't know how I am on time. But anyway, I'd just like to wrap it up. And I'd like to say that since that, since the person I have, since I come in, like sometimes I wake up in my life and I think, how did I get here? Like, what is actually going on? I had spent most of my life in prison, some sort of prison or institution. I could never have a relationship with anybody. I lived on two emotions my whole life, fight, run away. And then sometimes I'm just sitting at my kitchen table, my kids are singing nursery rhymes. She's in work, we're all in work. I have my own little business. I went back to college, I educated myself. I've all this stuff going on. And I just think, how did you get here? What happened to you? And there's no other explanation except God. God is all powerful and God can do miracles around here. And I'm going to read this, if I can get this up. I'm going to read this this little prayer that I always kind of use when stuff isn't going my way or when stuff is going my way. You never know. It all depends what day you catch me, you know. But I truly believe this is what recovery is for me, you know. People are often unreasonable, irrational and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish and intuitive motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and genuine enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and sincere, people may deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. What you spend years creating, others will destroy overnight. Create anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, some may be jealous. Be happy anyway. If the good you do today will often be forgotten, do good anyway. Give the best you have and it will never be enough. Give your best anyway. In the final analysis, it was between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. So thanks very much for listening to me.